Matt Marcus.
And I'm Monica Rolick.
This is For All Humankind, a podcast about your place in spaceflight.
Hey everyone, so this is a little different from our one of our usual episodes. We had some late breaking news last week while we were in the final stages of editing episode 4. So we are recording this emergency podcast for now, and episode 4 will hopefully be out shortly. So today we'll be talking about the recent announcement for the NASA Administrator and Deputy Administrator picks, as well as the HLS source selection that was announced last Friday. So to kick things off, last week, April 16th, Pam Melroy was announced, which she was nominated to be the Deputy Administrator for NASA, and she would be working with Bill Nelson, who was announced earlier on March 19th. For those of you who don't know what the selection process looks like, once they are announced and nominated, the nominees then have to go through a Senate hearing, during which they will hopefully be confirmed, and then they will actually take over as the Administrator and Deputy Administrator. I'm particularly excited about the Pam Melroy selection. She, for some background on her, she's currently a colonel in the U.S. Air Force and was a test pilot for many years and then became the shuttle pilot. She was one of only two female pilots, the other one being Eileen Collins. I don't know if she was the first, actually, but she was actually a candidate back in 2013 as well, but that was when David Newman was chosen. And she will be the third female deputy administrator that NASA has had, with Lori Garver being the other one, which is super exciting.
You say she'll be the third?
Yes.
Who was the, do you happen to know who the other one was besides Lori Garver?
Yeah, Lori Garver and then David Newman took over after Lori stepped down.
That's right, yeah.
I'm super excited. She actually had a really good quote that she released as well, which is, "This year NASA will embark on the first human deep space exploration program since Apollo, launch the James Webb Space Telescope, test the first all-electric X-plane and further technologies to take humans to Mars. And the way to do it is as a team that honors diversity in every dimension." I think she's a great pick. I've seen her speak before. She just seems like a great person from what I can tell, so excited about that one. And she'll be serving alongside Bill Nelson, who I mentioned was nominated on March 19th, and he actually will be in his hearing on April 21st, so coming up pretty soon. He's a former senator, actually, so he has had many years in the Senate, and after he left the Senate, he was appointed to the NASA Advisory Council by the former administrator, Jim Bridenstine. And he's quite close to the president, President Biden, so that's kind of a no surprise pick. He has a lot of years and a lot of experience interacting with space policy. Specifically, people say that he has an imprint on almost every space and science law, which is pretty hefty praise. And specifically, the 2010 NASA Authorization Act that Nelson and Hutchison, a Republican from Texas, authored after the Obama administration canceled the Constellation program. So he has his mark on that instruction to NASA to develop the new launch vehicle, the Space Launch System called SLS, and continue work on the Orion spacecraft. And he also authorized the Commercial Crew Program that was enacted under Obama's administration, which we've seen kind of the fruits of with the SpaceX Crew Dragon launches. So that's been really exciting.
And he's also one of very few sitting congresspeople to go to space themselves.
Yes, I forgot about that. Yeah, he has flown in space, which is, yeah, I always forget that we've flown civilians before. It's really, yeah. So yeah, a lot of like op-eds have been published about really both of these picks, but kind of wait and see to see what they end up doing for NASA. I think they are both no surprises there for their picks, but excited to see what they bring to the table, what changes they make, what continuation they have from Jim Bridenstine's work. Hopefully we do see that promise with the diversity in every dimension. I'd like to see that kind of follow through there. Any following thoughts from that, Matt?
Absolutely. I definitely agree with everything you said. I'm trying to think if there's anything in particular. I think it will be really interesting to watch the hearings coming up, you know, later this week to see what they have to say. And I think, you know, that'll just be, you know, really interesting. I know that was there were some contentious hearings with Jim Bridenstine when he was nominated, the previous NASA administrator. You know, that's sort of our first chance to really get a sense of what their priorities may be as administrator and deputy administrator.
Absolutely. And I know you live in DC, so you're much closer to that kind of action than I am, but very jealous because you can watch these hearings. You can also, if you live in DC, as Matt tells me, you can actually go in person and watch them.
In non-COVID times, that is.
COVID probably being non-COVID times, but nominally. So super jealous of that.
So the other big piece of news from last week is that NASA made their selection for the human landing system, which is essentially they decided which company will build the lunar lander that will return astronauts to the surface of the moon as part of the Artemis program. So there were three bids submitted by three different companies. One was SpaceX, which submitted use of a modified Starship for landing on the moon. Then the other is Blue Origin, which put together a team that was them, and I want to say it was either Lockheed Martin or Northrop Grumman, and I think it was Draper Labs was doing the software for their system, but that's based on Blue Origin's Blue Moon Lander, which I think is designed for both cargo and crew, and had been proposed, you know, before NASA had this bid out. And then the final one is by Dynetics, which is sort of lesser known in the popular culture anyways, aerospace company, maybe more of the kind of classical aerospace contractor as opposed to some of the new space. But they had a lander that they submitted as well. But to cut right to the chase, NASA selected SpaceX alone. There was the option in this program for NASA to select, I think to down select up to two of the three bids to receive further funding to develop their systems for flight. And basically what it came down to, if you read the source selection document from NASA, is that they only had the funding to select one of the systems. And SpaceX, amongst other things, was the only, I believe it was the only bid that came in below the cost cap that NASA had, which I think was $3 billion, and SpaceX came in at around $2.94 billion. So based on that and the lack of enough additional funding to award a bid to anyone else, SpaceX solely was selected for the contract. They also said in the source selection document that one big factor in SpaceX's favor that NASA found really impressive was that the amount of cargo that they can deliver and the volume of cargo is just, you know, way above anything that, you know, way above the requirements that NASA had laid out in the original, you know, call for proposals for this. And that was very appealing. It also has two airlocks, which is very appealing because it means if one fails, the crew still has a way to get into and out of the spacecraft. And also that the system that SpaceX is developing does not have a lot of additional work that has to be done to turn it from, you know, a system that kind of like Apollo can do a couple individual sorties of the moon to something that's much more sustainable with its own, commercial economy for lunar transportation.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned the two airlocks design feature, because just from a space habitat design perspective, we're kind of told you need that all the time. That's usually a requirement, is having two methods of ingress and egress. So I'm kind of surprised actually that the other teams didn't specifically have that feature. But I guess the moon is hard. Landing on the moon is hard. Designing for enough fuel to get off the moon again is also really hard. So I'm sure the mass counted for everyone there.
Yeah. And I think, when you're, SpaceX is planning to fly Starship there, which is, this like big ship. It's what they've been testing at their launch site out in South Texas. It's like, well over 100 feet tall that they would be landing on the moon. And, you know, mind you, at least like 3/4 of that or something is fuel. But it just kind of naturally has this, capacity that a more conventional lunar lander, what you may think of if you think of, like an Apollo style lunar lander, or any of the previous concepts over the last like 20 years or so, it's really, kind of a capsule on legs as opposed to this like big rocket with a lot of space within it. So it's, I can understand with a more conventional lunar lander how it's pretty difficult to fit even a single dedicated airlock on board. A lot of them, the idea is that you just kind of get everyone in spacesuits and then depressurize the entire cabin when you want to go outside.
Which has its own issues too, right? Because then you have, you're just burning through consumables at that point by basically evacuating all of your atmosphere.
Yeah, no, hopefully you at least have like a vacuum pump or something so you can store the atmosphere for later.
Oh, usually the vacuum pump is not really in the cards for the design, just from a complexity standpoint. But yeah, I'm really, really curious about the Starship design because at least to my relatively untrained eye, from half of a PhD, I guess. It seems to be designed really for atmosphere right now. So I'm, you know, that's looking at SN, which is like not even the full true Starship. So I'm curious to see how the design splits when they design for somewhere like Mars and design for the like lunar missions when you don't have an atmosphere at all and you have a much quieter landing required with very, very little gravity. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, and that was actually something else interesting that NASA mentioned in this selection document was that they, you know, really liked systems that can evolve from a lunar exploration architecture into deep space exploration, and then eventually systems that can get humans to Mars. So it was interesting to, you know, I don't know if I've seen that wording before in a NASA decision that they are, you know, specifically, you know, rating as a factor, like how well can your system evolve into something that can eventually send people to Mars? So that's exciting to see.
Yeah, it's reassuring to see that kind of future proofing for them, for their design.
Absolutely. So to get into the, you know, I've detailed it a little bit, but just the general idea of how SpaceX's system would work. Like I said, it's very much based on the Starship that they've been testing out in South Texas. It looks pretty much exactly the same, except it doesn't have fins. And instead of being this, you know, shiny stainless steel structure, I think it's still stainless steel underneath, but the whole thing is painted white, I assume for thermal reasons. And like I said, loses the fins because those don't help you on the moon where there's no atmosphere. And then it has some additional engines kind of near the top. I think they'd probably be near the top of the fuel tanks, but below like where the pressurized section with the crew and any cargo would be on the lunar Starship. So some engines up there, people have speculated that that is to, you know, when you're touching down on the surface of the moon, if you have engines on the bottom, they may kick up dust and then, you know, potentially dust and some rocks that could bounce back up and hit your spacecraft. So I think there's a number of reasons that it is appealing to have the engines further up, but that's all speculation on my part. The official details of this bid are not out, except for some of the concepts of operations, which was detailed in the source selection document. So based on those details that were in the source selection document, SpaceX, in order to get this thing to the moon, launches, it sounds like they first launch into Earth orbit a number of tankers. And I know people have speculated that SpaceX may build an orbital fuel depot that all of those tankers would go to and transmit their fuel to, or alternatively, they may just stay on orbit until the lunar Starship, the Starship HLS as it's called, that would actually you know, go to the moon, until that launches. It sounds like it would launch unmanned into Earth orbit. And it would basically fuel up from those tankers or the fuel depot or what have you. And then I believe it would go on its way to the moon once it is fully fueled. After that happens, basically once the entire system is safely staged and in place, the crew would launch from the Earth on Orion. They would rendezvous with the Starship wherever it is. And then they would go down to the surface and back on the Starship along with hopefully quite a large quantity of lunar samples. So yeah, there's a lot of, you know, features that NASA really said they liked in this proposal. In particular, they mentioned that, you know, they had as a requirement that whatever your lander is, it be able to loiter in lunar orbit, you know, waiting for the crew basically for as much as 10 days. And SpaceX said that the Starship could loiter for up to 100 days. So that, you know, far exceeds that requirements. And NASA also said that you know, as I mentioned, that the up mass and down mass, the cargo capacity to and from the lunar surface, greatly exceeds NASA's initial requirements. And then finally, like I mentioned, that SpaceX basically starts with their final design. They don't need to evolve into something sustainable, that it sounds like they can launch one of these and then it can kind of keep going between the lunar surface and orbit on its own without like a lot of upgrades from their initial capability.
Yeah, this sounds like a really, really promising design, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it fits in with the other pieces, just because I know I personally am invested in what Gateway will look like, and NASA's been keeping those cards pretty close to their chest. Although they have a plan, I've definitely had some cryptic conversations. But I'm really, really curious to see what the details are about that system, just because it's like such a cool, interesting concept as a gateway to deep space.
Yeah, I've seen some like fan renderings actually of the Starship docked to the gateway, like in, you know, where it would be waiting potentially for the crew to arrive from Earth to go down to the surface of the moon. So maybe we can link that rendering and some of the cool official ones as well in the show notes for this.
I am curious though about the loitering requirement. If we do have a gateway system, what do you think are the specific reasons for having that loitering requirement rather than just with gateway so close, like having that as a specific requirement versus shooting for that shorter target? And do you know maybe why SpaceX decided to shoot up to 100 day loitering capabilities?
My guess is that, you know, I think, and maybe this goes also to, you know, some of the level of, you know, kind of preparedness that NASA expressed in the maturity of the design. I want to say that none of these designs are totally mature. There's like years of development ahead for any of them. But the selection document did seem to say that the Starship HLS is somewhat more mature than technologies needed for the other two options. And I think a big part of that may be that while they were sort of designing their system specifically for these NASA bids, you know, SpaceX is designing Starship, maybe not this lunar variant, but they're designing Starship for their own ambitions of going to Mars and, you know, other kind of game-changing in-space operations. And I think it just happens that, you know, this system, you know, according to their bid, is very capable of meeting the goals of this program that NASA has, but it's sort of over-engineered in a way for that. It is, you know, it can do that mission very effectively, and there's a lot of even more complex things that it will hopefully be able to do as well.
It's like this is also a good example of kind of the payoff from commercial crew, just because with this setup, SpaceX is definitely putting in a lot more of their own money into this investment, but the result is that we get something that's much, I guess, leaner than maybe the historical NASA projects have been, and it really works well for both sides, from NASA's point of view and from SpaceX's point of view. They get a customer, and then NASA gets a vehicle. So,
and hopefully it's not just NASA getting a vehicle. You know, hopefully this is like, you know, as we see with you know, with Dragon now, that was initially designed largely with NASA support, but also SpaceX put in some money, and that was designed to get astronauts to and from the space station. But now we see, you know, even later this year, there's going to be private missions launching to orbit on Dragon with space tourists. So I think it's really exciting to see that, you know, budding in space economy as a result of NASA investment and, you know, subsidizing these very complex systems, both financially and providing expertise.
Definitely. I think I've heard it be compared to the railroad during America's westward expansion period. And I think that's a good analogy, just in terms of once the infrastructure is there, other businesses are allowed to flourish around it. And it's able to, you know, once you lower the cost of actually getting there, it's like this whole new world of opportunity.
Yeah, airmail too. I've heard that, you know, sort of the government had airmail with just like these small circa World War I biplanes, you know, these like wooden biplanes that you've seen probably. And, you know, that, you know, you can make the argument those led to airlines. So it's like the same sort of thing. Programs like this could eventually lead to commercial space lines where, you know, anyone can go to the moon someday. Okay, well, I think unless you had anything, we can wrap this there. If any listeners have any questions about any of this, if there's like something that piqued your interest or something you wish we had talked about more, definitely feel free to submit questions. We love to answer any listener questions and kind of clarify any, you know, anything you want to understand better on the episodes of our podcast. We may answer that on a future episode.
Sounds good. Thanks so much for listening.